Israel launches an attack on Iran, once again raising fears of an all-out war in the Middle East. We'll discuss that with a Filipino community leader in Dubai. First Lady Lisa Araneta Marcos admits she is not in good terms with Vice President Sara Duterte over the drug addict joke made by Duterte's father against President Marcos. The First Lady also hinting there's tension between her and sister-in-law, Senator Aimee Marcos. And a mixed bag of adjustments in local fuel prices, seen next week. I'm Stanley Palisada. Dateline Philippines begins right now. For those of you watching us on YouTube and Facebook, glad you could join us. We begin with the Middle East, where Israel has attacked Iran. A U.S. official has confirmed missiles fired from Israel have hit a target in the Iranian city of Isfahan. Iranian state media said explosions were heard in the city as air defenses were activated. Flights across several areas, including Tehran, were suspended. Traffic over the Iranian airspace also diverted. No word yet on any casualties. Isfahan is considered a strategically important city as it hosts military research and development sites as well as bases. Israel had promised to retaliate against Iran after the latter launched an unprecedented drone attack on Israel over the weekend. Iran's attack was in response to a deadly Israeli strike on Tehran's embassy in Syria that killed top military generals. The international community had been calling on Israel not to respond to the Iranian attack amid fears of a wider spillover of the conflict in the Middle East. Still in the Middle East, three Filipinos are confirmed dead in the massive flooding in the United Arab Emirates. The Immigrant Workers Department said two of the victims died of suffocation inside their vehicle. A third victim died after his vehicle fell into a sinkhole at the height of the flooding. The DMW assures the families of the victims of full government support and assistance. The Philippine government also coordinating the repatriation of the victims' remains. The UAE received a year's worth of rain in just one day. The heavy rainfall killed 19 people in neighboring Oman. Let's now talk to a Filipino community leader in Dubai about the massive floods there as well as the possibility of a full-scale war in the Middle East. Joining us is Elaine Villena. She is the Vice President of the Filipino Social Club in Dubai. Elaine, welcome to Dateline Philippines and thank you so much for taking our invitation.
Thank you and good afternoon there in the Philippines.
Good afternoon.
Good morning here in Dubai.
Good morning to you then. Update us first on the current situation in Dubai following the floods. Is the situation back to normal for Dubai first and maybe later for Oman?
Yes, currently the transportation is about around 80% are back to normal.
Okay.
As well as the flood, it almost okay and everything is under control at the moment.
Okay, that's the situation in Dubai. What about Oman? What have you heard?
I've heard with regards to Oman, it's as far as we can see in the social media because we don't have, because Oman is different already country, in not included in Dubai and Northern Emirates. So as far as I know, Oman is more affected rather than the UAE.
Okay. Now, Eleni, we've heard about three Filipinos being victims, casualties, in fact, in the floods. What do you know about this so far?
Yes, that is right. It was already officially featured already, and I believe that the migrant workers office are already in coordination with the family and the employee of these victims.
All right. And the identities, of course, have been known. You know, the government is saying it will assist in the repatriation of the remains. Talk to us now about the other Filipinos who may not have been casualties, but were also severely affected by the flooding there in Dubai. What were the most common appeals that you've heard from our countrymen? Eleni?
Yes, most of the affected Filipinos, they are appealing with regards for the transportation. They are having a difficulties to, you know, come back to their work, as well as the, they are also affected by the electricity and flood in their buildings.
Okay, Eleni, what about evacuation centers? Because when there are flooding, when floods happen here in the Philippines, we usually have temporary shelters. Is that the same situation in the UAE for those Filipinos affected? Are there others there who are in temporary shelters right now? What do you know?
As of the moment, we are fine because most of the Filipino are staying in a flat, whereas it's elevated.
Okay.
And they are okay at the moment.
Okay. Now
there are no evacuation happening right now.
Okay. Your group, Filipino Social Club in Dubai, you have been, you know, in close contact with our Filipino community in Dubai, in UAE. In fact, what advice have you been giving them as to the flood situation and how to manage their respective situations there?
Yes, as an active organization of the Filipino Social Club, we have a group in a WhatsApp, and we are very well coordinated to our leaders here in Dubai. And we are in a situation that at any time that we are having an inquiry with regards to our kababayan here in Dubai and United Arab of Emirates, we are able to, you know, to gather some information to all this to all our kababayan, so we will be able to extend our help to them.
Okay, Eleni, let's talk about another matter, the developments in the peace and order situation in the Middle East. What is the pulse now among the Filipino community members as regards a possible spillover of conflict between Israel and now with Iran? And I'm sure your group has been talking about this already. This is already part of those conversations that you're having as regards safety of Filipinos there. So what are you hearing so far?
With regards to that, we are giving, you know, the our full trust to the government, as we are very safe in here, and the government is also taking care of that.
Okay, so what message have you heard from the Department of Foreign Affairs? You know, there should be contingency plans already in place in case the tension or the conflict escalates in the Middle East, which may eventually affect other countries there aside from those involved.
Yeah, as of the moment, there we did not receive anything advice from our government. As far as I understand, that the government, especially in Dubai government, are doing their study with regards to that. What do you call that? With that issue, and in case that happen, for sure that we will be able to advise accordingly with regards to the government itself.
All right. On that note, Eleni Villena, VP for Filipino Social Club in Dubai, thank you so much for taking our call and for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Back here at home, First Lady Liza Araneta Marcos opening up on her strained relationship with Vice President Sara Duterte. She spoke to broadcaster Anthony Taberna on his YouTube channel. The First Lady said she was always kind to the Vice President, but she admitted she was hurt when Vice President Duterte attended a Davao City rally and laughed when her father, former President Rodrigo Duterte, accused her husband of being a drug addict.
Kumusta kayo ni VP Sara?
I was always kind to her. When Bong had that Bagong Lipunan rally, she came, and my husband, that was supposed to be December eh. Parang to start the new year, o bagong Pilipinas, parang huwag na tayo mag-away, mabait tayo, let's help the people, blah, 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 blah. Eh, na-postpone, ganyan. So I think it was in Feb or March, right? So she went there at 3, and then she went to
Davao.
And then when she went to Davao, Duterte said, oh, bangag, bangag, diba? Imagine a former president calling, ano, bangag. I mean, wow, you had 6 years. Why would you call ano bangag, di ba? For me, nasaktan ako because my husband will do everything to protect you. You ran together, di ba? Sama-sama tayo babangon muli. Pupunta ka sa rally, tatawagan yung presidente mong bangag, di ba, you're going to laugh? Tama ba yan? Even Lenny never did that.
There have been speculations of a rift between the two after the First Lady seemingly ignored Vice President Duterte during a send-off ceremony last month. But President Marcos has always maintained he has no issues with a vice president. The First Lady also hinted at possible tensions with her sister-in-law, Senator Amy Marcos. In the same interview with Anthony Taberna, the First Lady was asked about her relationship with a senator who is not keen on defending her brother from the tirades of the Duterte clan. This was her response.
Maybe you should ask her. I'm just the outlaw. Uh-huh. I know what line not to cross.
Uh-huh. Pero nasa speaking terms ba kayo?
Well, every Sunday we have a family lunch. Mm-hmm. Once kami my mother-in-law said, "Iya, hindi mo iniimbita si Amy sa mga ano." Ma'am, ako pa. May group chat kami, lahat sila nandiyan. Sabi niya, anong group chat? Ah, ma'am, hindi ko na pwede. No, but she's always invited.
Kailan pa kayo huling nagkausap na ng civil?
When did we? Christmas, I think.
The president and his sister have differed in positions on several issues and policy decisions in the past, including their stand on the Maharlika Investment Fund and charter change. The senator also remains an ally of the Dutertes despite a deepening rift between the families. President Marcos is leading the 45th Philippine National Police Academy commencement exercises in Cavite. He is joined by Vice President Sara Duterte in welcoming over 200 cadets to public service. Joyce Balancho joins us now with that story. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Sally. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is currently leading the 45th commencement exercises of the Philippine National Police Academy here at the Cacampa General Mariano N. Castaneda in Silang, Cavite. He is joined today by Vice President Sara Duterte and DILG Secretary Benhur Abalos. Out of the 314 cadets who entered the PNPA in 2020, only 223 from the PNPA Layag Diwa class of 2024 completed a Bachelor of Science in Public Safety, and they have graduated today. PNPA said that this will be the last graduates who will be appointed in the government's tri-bureau service, that is the Philippine National Police, the Bureau of Fire Protection, and the Bureau of Jail Management and Penology. By 2025, PNPA will be producing police lieutenants only. DILG Secretary Benhur Abalos announced that 199 from this batch will serve in the Philippine National Police, 12 in the Bureau of Jail Management and Penology, and another 12 will be in the Bureau of Fire Protection. In a short interview with the top graduates earlier, class valedictorian Maria Camille Cabasis shared their story of perseverance amid the difficult training of the PNPA. She said she envisions her batch to be contributing to the current administration's aspiration of Bagong Pilipinas. She added that her dream is to become a police general who is at the forefront of public service. Currently, Stanley, President Marcos is giving his speech to the PNPA graduates. We are waiting if the president or the vice president will grant a media interview after this event. Sandy.
All right. We look forward to that. Again, Joyce Balancho, thank you so much. President Marcos met with visiting New Zealand Prime Minister Christopher Luxon to discuss deeper ties in maritime defense and security. Joyce Balancho reports.
The Philippines and New Zealand have agreed to deepen their defense ties during the official visit of New Zealand Prime Minister Christopher Luxon to the Philippines. In a joint statement Thursday evening, President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Prime Minister Luxon acknowledged the strong existing bilateral defense cooperation between the two countries, as they also committed to further deepen it by exploring new frameworks of cooperation. This includes signing of a mutual logistics supporting agreement and the possible conclusion of a status of visiting forces agreement by the end of 2024. In their joint press conference, President Marcos said that the two countries are eyeing to institutionalize a comprehensive maritime security cooperation that will guide the two countries' respective law enforcement and civilian agencies in addressing common threats at sea.
Our comprehensive maritime cooperation is envisioned to deal with a wide range of issues, from piracy to illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing, terrorism in the maritime domain, contraband smuggling, wildlife trafficking, amongst others.
President Marcos also said that the Philippines welcomes New Zealand's commitment to advocate for the peaceful resolution of disputes in accordance with the international law, including the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea.
Your support, Mr. Prime Minister, and that of the New Zealand government strengthens the overarching principles on which our continued march to prosperity and regional security are anchored. We are delighted to acknowledge the intent of our friends in New Zealand to join our efforts towards a comprehensive maritime security for our region.
The two leaders also expressed interest to develop stronger economic ties and acknowledged the ongoing cooperation in the agriculture sector. Likewise, the two leaders committed to further eliminate trade barriers and to utilize the benefits of free trade agreements. Prime Minister Luxon recognized the Philippines as the fastest growing economy in Southeast Asia.
And we are both determined to grow two-way trade by at least 50% in the next few years. And it's great to see bilateral trade between New Zealand and the Philippines not only recover to pre-pandemic levels, but continue to increase.
The two leaders also recognized opportunities for New Zealand and Philippine companies to work together in the areas of agriculture, technology and innovation, agribusiness, renewable energy, education and skills, digital infrastructure, among others. They also discussed climate change and the efforts of the two nations to contribute to the goals of the Paris Agreement, which is an international treaty on climate change. Joyce Balancho, ABS-CBN News.
Earlier today, President Marcos witnessed the grand launch of the National Fiber Backbone Phase 1 project of the ICT Department, which is expected to enhance internet speeds in the country. Pia Gutierrez joins us for an update. Pia, over to you.
Fiber Backbone Phase 1 grand launch
during his term as he led the launch of Phase 1 of the National Fiber Backbone Project in Pasay City. According to the DICT, the National Fiber Backbone Project aims to increase internet connectivity and service capacity in the Philippines through a demand-responsive neutral fiber backbone designed to facilitate widespread internet access in specified nodes accessible to government entities. Phase 1 of the project spans 1,245 kilometers and is composed of 28 nodes from Lawag, Ilocos Norte to Roses, Quezon City, bringing high-speed internet access to at least 14 provinces in northern and central Luzon, two national government data centers, and four BCDA ecozones. This is expected to empower 346 national and local government offices connected to GovNet, boosting their overall operational efficiency and generating more than 145 million pesos in potential savings annually, according to the president. It will also enable direct internet access for approximately 750,000 beneficiaries in regions 1, 3, and in the NCR. Let's listen to the president.
Nationally, this is the infrastructure that will open employment opportunities, improve market efficiency, attract foreign investment, and stimulate livelihood across the different sectors of our economy and our society. It will close the digital divide and bring to our people the transformative power of free and fast access to information. It will allow the state to guarantee the people's enjoyment of the internet as a basic human right.
Stanley, the president says the government hopes to complete the next five phases of the National Fiber Backbone Project by 2026. And once finished, the DICT expects to increase the internet penetration rate in the country from 33% to 65%, reaching 70 million Filipinos. It is also expected to lower the price of internet connectivity to as much as $5 per Mbps. Stanley?
All right, thank you so much for the update, Pia Gutierrez. Coming up next, foreign learners in the Philippines warned against engaging in illegal activities amid the alleged influx of Chinese students. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We're back on Thursday. Metro Manila saw its hottest day yet this year. Will this heat intensify in the coming days? Let's find out from our resident meteorologist, Ariel Rojas. Ariel, can it be hotter today?
Hi, good afternoon, Stanley. Temperatures records continue to be logged as the hot and dry season persists. Yesterday, Metro Manila recorded its hottest temperature this year at 38.2 degrees Celsius observed in AIA in Pasay City. This is also the region's new hottest for the month of April. Etchaga, Isabela, and Camiling Tarlac also sizzled at 39.2 and 39.1 degrees Celsius. The scorching weather will continue this weekend due to the prevailing ridge or extension of a high-pressure area east of Luzon and the warm easterlies from the Pacific. PAGASA forecasts heat index values or perceived heat already considered dangerous to human health this Friday and Saturday in Aborlan and Puerto Princesa in Palawan, Rojas City, Tanawan City, and Dumangas Town in Iloilo City in Iloilo Town Province. Metro Manila will expect heat index values of 39 to 40 degrees Celsius. To prevent heat stress, the public is reminded to avoid direct sun exposure, wear comfortable clothing, avoid heavy physical activities during hot weather, and hydrate frequently. Those who will be going to the beach and resorts are also advised to apply sunblock. Rains are also expected in some areas this weekend. Friday and Saturday afternoon, thunderstorms may be experienced in Cordillera and parts of Mindanao. And on Sunday, however, scattered rains will begin in the morning in Caraga and Davao regions and spread to Bohol, Cebu, Negros, Panay, and the rest of Mindanao from midday through the afternoon. But Metro Manila will remain hot and dry this Saturday and Sunday. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Stanley.
Thank you so much for the heads up, Ariel Rojas. Moving on, foreigners holding Philippine student visas warned against engaging in illegal activities. The Immigration Bureau says doing so could subject them to intelligence investigations. The statement comes after some lawmakers raised concerns on the increased presence of Chinese students in areas hosting joint military facilities of Washington and Manila. Lawmakers have called for an investigation into the possibility of Chinese sleeper cells in the country. Despite this, the Immigration Bureau hopes this won't deter legitimate foreign students from pursuing their studies in the Philippines. The Energy Department expects a mixed bag of price adjustments in petroleum products next week. Gasoline prices seen going up by as much as 60 centavos per liter, while diesel and kerosene could see a rollback. Energy officials say despite heightened geopolitical conflict in the Middle East, demand from the U.S. went down due to a buildup in inventory, plus weaker demand from China. There could be more flight delays in the coming months with a looming red lightning alert season. Airlines and airport authorities say while they are ready, they are appealing to the public for understanding. Jackie Pascual reports.
Airlines warn passengers of the coming red lightning alert season, which is expected to begin in May. Budget carrier Cebu Pacific says last year there were 4 red lightning alerts, or RLA, in April, but it jumped to 20 in May and 27 in June. In total, over 1,000 flights of Cebu Pacific alone were disrupted by RLA in 2023. The airline has now installed additional lightning shelters at NAIA for the safety of ground and ramp workers.
If a lightning strikes, whether it strikes close to that shelter, whether it strikes actually on that shelter, they're protected. But on the second hour, if you're at the boarding gates, we provide meals na kagad.
We have spare provisions, very generous spare provisions to ensure operational resilience of our, like even for things that are beyond our control.
RLA could take a few minutes and even an hour or two, and this had an economic impact on the airline. Cebu Pacific estimates they lose around 5 to 10 million pesos per month because of lightning alerts, which affect flights as well as fuel and power consumption. Philippine Airlines says RLA is declared by the government as a safety measure to prevent untoward incidents to passengers and personnel. AirAsia Philippines appeals to passengers for patience during an RLA, as sometimes it can cause a one-hour delay. For Transportation Secretary Jaime Bautista, the airport is ready in case more RLAs are issued.
We conform to all these procedures and policies for the safety not only of the aircraft but the personnel that are handling flights. Working closely to see to it na mabawasan yung inconvenience, no? Kung sakaling magkaroon ng tinatawag na red lightning alert.
Bautista also guarantees NAIA will not be underwater in case a heavy downpour hits the area, similar to what happened at Dubai International Airport.
Maganda naman yung ating drainage system dito, no? Ang pagkakaiba sa Dubai, ang Dubai kasi hindi umuulan eh, no? So mukhang hindi naisama doon sa kanilang plano yung paggawa or pagkakaroon ng magandang drainage system, no?
Bautista also asserts that NAIA is ready for any power interruptions if and when power supply dwindles amid the high heat index. Last month, NAIA suffered a power failure in one terminal, affecting the air conditioning system. Jackie Pascual, ABS-CBN News.
The social security system is targeting the increase, or to increase the number, in fact, of informal workers onboarded into the system through its eWheels program. Lady Vicencio tells us more about this.
Of the 43 million members of the Social Security System, or SSS, not even half belong to the informal sector, which comprises most of the labor force in the country. This sector includes vendors, domestic and transport workers, and even those working for family members. To be able to provide social protection to more informal workers, SSS launched its eWheels program in one of the known textile markets located in the town of Taytay in Rizal Province.
An informal sector na kailangan bigyan ng pansin. Kasi yung mga employed sector, like for example, yung mga nasa kumpanya, opisina, it's already given ano, na before they are being hired, kailangan may SSS na sila at kailangan maayos ang hulog. So ito yung sector na dapat tuunan natin ng pansin kasi ito yung pinaka-importante sa lahat, ang informal sector.
SSS is looking to onboard around 2,500 informal workers and give access to benefits for disability, maternity, death, sickness, retirement, and unemployment. These off-site booths facilitate an array of services such as membership application, issuance of social security number and payment reference number, and updating of membership data. Members filing for benefit claims may also be assisted.
Kasi busy na ako sa pagtitinda ng sampagita dito sa Taytay eh, sa araw-araw. Matagal lang hindi ko na-verify eh. Kaya gusto ko nga malaman kung ilan ang ano ko dito sa ano sa hulog.
SSS said eWheel services can also be availed by residents from nearby towns with no SSS branch near them. The agency is also tying up with other local government units in hopes to bring social protection to the grassroots. Lady Vicencio, ABS-CBN News.
Still ahead, the 12-person jury in Donald Trump's historic criminal trial finally completed. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. World news, the full 12-person jury in Donald Trump's historic criminal trial has been seated. The panel is composed of 7 men and 5 women. The Manhattan court is now working on selecting 6 alternates, and one has been picked so far. Judge Juan Merchan is hopeful the selection process will be finished when the trial resumes Friday. Outside the courtroom, the former U.S. president once again railed at Merchan, calling the trial a New York scam. Trump is accused of falsifying business records to cover up a sex scandal.
Supposed to be a lot of different places campaigning, but I've been here all day on a trial that really is a very unfair trial. The whole world is watching this hoax. You got a DA that's out of control. You have a judge that's highly conflicted. The whole thing is a mess, and you have the leading candidate and leading crooked Joe Biden by a lot. He's the one that should be in trouble. We have no justice in having a press that doesn't want to cover the facts.
Meanwhile, prosecutors say Trump violated his gag order 7 more times. This order was issued to stop Trump from making statements about witnesses, jurors, prosecutors, and court staff. Judge Merchan will have a hearing on the matter next week. From Trump's trial to the campaign trail, U.S. President Joe Biden getting the endorsement of the Kennedys during a campaign event in Philadelphia. This in rebuke for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s independent bid for the White House. Many in the elite family have broken with Kennedy, who is a known anti-vaccine advocate, over his views.
We want to make crystal clear our feeling that the best way forward for America is to re-elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to 4 more years. President Biden has been a champion for all the rights and freedoms that my father and uncle stood for. That's why nearly every single grandchild of Joe and Rose Kennedy supports Joe Biden.
Biden has been campaigning in Pennsylvania this week, a critical swing state for his re-election bid.
What an incredible honor. What an incredible honor. I don't want to become emotional, but what an incredible honor to have the support of the Kennedy family. Donald Trump's vision is one of anger, hate, revenge, and retribution. He embraces the insurrectionist of January the 6th. He's running on it. And as mentioned already, he promised to be a dictator on day one, his own words. In 2024, we have a chance to make hope and history rhyme again. Are you ready to do that with me? Yes. Are you ready to move forward, not back?
Switching gears now, five-time NBA champion and Lakers legend Derek Fisher made a stop here in Manila for a basketball clinic. He shared some of the highlights of his storied NBA career in this interview with our very own Migs Bustos.
We have five-time NBA champion and, of course, Laker legend right here on ABS-CBN News, Mr. Derek Fisher. Thank you so much, Derek, for joining us here in Manila. Now, Derek, when you talk about at least the most talked about championships that you've had with the Lakers, the first three-peat and the back-to-back, can you tell us the difference of those eras? What was it like playing with a young Shaq and young Kobe and, of course, your time with the back-to-back with the Lakers?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, man. I think, you know, those teams were... The results were similar, but the styles were so different. Shaq was so dominant physically, the way we played at times, like we just beat teams up and imposed our will on them physically due to Shaq's greatness. And then obviously as Kobe matured and developed as a player, his greatness also complemented and supplemented Shaq, and we essentially became unbeatable. The teams in the late 2000s, we did not have that physical advantage, right? Like Shaq was always the advantage. So the teams in the late 2000s, we were more cerebral. We played faster.
With Powell right there.
With Powell Gasol, yeah. Lamar Odom, Trevor Ariza, Luke Walton. Like we had a really, our basketball IQ was really high. And the younger guys, they were keeping Kobe and myself like fresh mentally. Mm-hmm. They pushed us in practice. And I thought that those teams were just as great. You know, losing in the finals to the Celtics in 08, that sucked and hurt. But I thought in the late 2000s, we still accomplished a great deal.
Now, I'm going to compound this question. You are, of course, your playing career has spanned through decades and, of course, with multiple teams. What does it take to be an elite point guard in the NBA, especially handling different types of egos, handling different types of players with teams such as the Lakers, the Jazz, and the Thunder, all of these teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, during the years that I played, the position was different. You didn't necessarily have to score as much as the guys do now. I think the biggest thing in being a point guard or a leader on any team is, you know, you have to lead by example and you have to be willing to sacrifice for others. That's how your teammates, you know, grow to trust you with the basketball and with being a leader. They know that you're going to have their back. You're going to make sure that everybody is getting what they need. And I think the best leaders, you know, in business, in life and in sports, in particular point guards, that's what separates most of those guys. It's not just them scoring points and putting stats up, but being a guy that everybody on the team really respects at a high level.
Yes, and of course you've played at a time in the 2000s where it's a transition from the 90s, 2000s, but you know, you spent your time in the game also as a coach. Now in this current generation of basketball, what is it like? How has been your transition coaching in the pros and also coaching high school basketball?
Yeah, no, the transition you know, starting in coaching at the pro level initially, you know, that was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that the game has changed a lot from 2014
yes.
to 2024.
Yes.
A lot of differences, but taking my experiences from playing and coaching at the professional level on the men's side as well as on the women's side in the WNBA, and then just trying to combine those experiences to invest in young players now at the high school level. I think the biggest thing, again, is as a coach, you're a leader, and your players have to feel like you care about their success more so than your record.
Yes, yes.
And that's something that you have to stay connected to yes. every day.
Well, I'll just ask this quick. Of course, the late Kobe Bryant, how was he like as a brother, as a teammate? And yeah. as an individual overall?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, like all brothers, there are days where they get on your nerves and you just want to fight them and beat them up. And then, you know, there are other days where nobody means more to you than your brother. And, you know, we had a lot of days where we pushed each other, we made each other better. But, you know, I think, you know, Kobe inspired an entire generation of people to just want to be better, to want to be as great as what you're doing as possible. And that's a true testament to what legacy really is the impact he was able to have on our world.
So, Derek, your message to all the Filipino fans watching this interview right now?
I mean, first and foremost, to all the Filipino fans watching right now, thank you for always making me and my loved ones, whoever, feel so welcome here. This is my second time here. Always feels very comfortable. And to be halfway around the world, that says a lot about you more so than me. And so thank you so much for welcoming us with open arms. Thank you for your love for the game of basketball, the way the NBA has grown. I would not be sitting here without the support of people like you. So thank you. God bless you.
And before we go, a Filipino restaurant is recognized as one of the most popular and best-reviewed food establishments in Florida. Paul Garilao tells us how Abstract Filipino Essence landed in Yelp's top 100 list.
In a triumph for local cuisine, Abstract Filipino Essence in Jacksonville, Florida has landed a coveted position on the top 100 for 2024 of the popular business directory Yelp.
It's kind of cool that, you know, I'm representing our culture. You know, like, you know, again, top Yelp 100. Before I start doing this, I always ask myself, na bakit ang pagkain natin wala sa community? So I'm eager to do that for, you know, I will represent our culture to the community.
The Yelp Top 100 is an annual list that features a wide range of restaurants across the U.S. based on user review and popularity. Abstract is the only Filipino restaurant and the only Northeast Florida food establishment that made it to the list.
Community only knows Filipino food is lumpia, you know? So I kind of like wanted to introduce more. That's why our hashtag is more than lumpia.
Jojo Hernandez, the visionary entrepreneur behind Abstract, is from Pangasinan Province in the Northern Philippines and has over 21 years of culinary experience. He says the restaurant was originally launched as a modest tent setup. Abstract soon transitioned into a food truck as demand grew during the peak of COVID-19 pandemic.
Start saving some money. So I ended up buying a food truck to start with. It's kind of cool. Parang advertisement na rin. Because, you know, you go bounce like community to buildings to like, you know, job and all that kind of stuff.
The persistent calls from local patrons turned loyal customers led to the establishment of Abstract's brick and mortar site. The move is a significant milestone in the restaurant's journey from being a simple street food to becoming a household culinary name in Jacksonville. The chef attributes the uniqueness of Abstract to its compelling narrative of food production.
Our recipe in here is a family recipe. So I make everything from the scratch in here, like even the Mamacita adobo seasoning. So I have like, you know, dry, dusted adobo chicken wings, kind of like appetizer. Instead of buying those packets, because right now everything's expensive, so I start making it my own.
The best-selling dishes, such as sisig, Adobo and Chicken Tocino embody a culinary fusion that blends traditional Filipino flavors and Western cuisine elements, according to Chef Hernandez. Despite the presence of other Filipino restaurants in Jacksonville, Hernandez says he does not want to compete with them, but instead live them, collaborate with them, with the common goal of promoting Filipino culture.
For me, it's not a competition. Because I believe Filipino, we have a different palate. Like, you know, I'm Ilocano, you know, my wife is Kapangpangan. So she cook, Kapangpangan cook a different adobo. We cook a different adobo. So I have so much respect with them. So I don't see it as a competition. It's the way how you present your food. The more Filipino food around us in Jacksonville, the better for us too, na malalaman nila yung pagkain natin.
Paul Garilao, ABS-CBN News, Pensacola, Florida.
And that will do it for today. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm Stanley Palisada. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on the YouTube channel of ABS-CBN News and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, everyone, as you keep it here on the News Channel.